Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
Hi, and I'm Michelle McHugh, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We have a new guest host today because I thought I'd widen the net and get more people into my cult. This was a cult. I didn't know if you knew that. We're really not a podcast / radio show. We're a cult. It's a very small cult.
Yes.
Right now, we're working on it. We'll be chasing comets soon enough. Don't worry. Anyways, we'll talk to Michelle and find out more about her and everything, but let's get through the paperwork first. And you can go to us at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can search our podcast. You can listen to our movie reviews, DVD reviews. We have other podcasts. We got a big announcement coming out next week for some changes going on the Idiot Boxers. You can also get us on iTunes by searching Fat Guys at the Movies. You can leave us a review. We like good reviews best, but any review's fine. There was somebody who actually, I think, reposted a bad review from like 2 years ago because apparently they wanted to bump it to the top.
Of course.
You can get us on Facebook at facebook.com/FGATM, like our page, and you get all the feeds and the updates through there. You can also email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. And you can reach me personally on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr. I now will introduce you to Michelle McHugh I keep wanting to call you Maureen McHugh, who is a sci-fi writer.
That's funny because that's my middle name.
Oh, it is? Really? What's your mother's maiden name and social security number? Just out of curiosity.
Exactly.
But anyways, Michelle McHugh, tell everybody who I know who you are, but tell everybody else who you are and what you do and all that good stuff.
Yes, I'm one of the writers at WeAreMovieGeeks.com, website. We are based out of St. Louis, but we have writers in New York and L.A. and so we pretty much cover all movie news and festivals and award shows and just, overall movies.
Yeah. Did you consider yourself a movie geek before you joined We Are Movie Geeks?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. We're talking like age 2. My mom bringing me the 2001 Space Odyssey. So
at age 2?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I
did it just blow your mind as a 2 year old?
Because I thought the little pigs running around at the beginning of the movie were cows.
Okay.
So I have, yeah, and we're talking like, yeah, movie geek from the get go.
My
it's
dad.
A, it's a generational thing, too.
Yeah. Oh, well, my dad took me to see 2001 The Space Odyssey is his favorite movie. And he took me to see it when I was like, it was right after Star Wars, I remember, because I was crazy into sci-fi. And it's a tough haul for a little kid to see that movie, because it's obtuse at times. It really, really is. It's a thick movie. But, I mean, I appreciated it, but I showed it to my wife, who's not a big movie geek.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when we were dating, I showed it to my wife, and we were downstairs in her parents' basement watching it, and she's like, what is going on? I go, no, they'll explain it all.
Right.
And because, hint, they don't. Spoiler, they don't explain anything in 2001.
No, you have to think outside of the box on that kind of movie.
Yeah, and I mean, she likes science fiction, but she likes the very mainstream science fiction. And so we're watching it, and it's just getting weirder and weirder, and they, like, go through the Stargate, and then he's in the alien rooms where they've kind of constructed. And she didn't know what was going on. I'm like, no, they'll explain it all at the end. And she's like, okay. And I go, no, they'll explain it all. And it goes there, boom, boom, on the bed, boom, monolith, Star Child, roll credits. And she looks at me. She's like, what is... I said, I'm kidding. They didn't explain anything, did they? So she was not happy with it.
Very good. Yeah. But my all-time favorite has got to be Jaws. So you know how stoked I am about the Blu-ray.
Blu-ray comes out next week, yeah.
Yeah. So, we're talking. And then after that was Alien and,
I'm not going to be rude and ask you how. But if you were 2 when you saw 2001...
And I was told.
Yeah.
So I was about 10 when, so I'll just put it out there. I was 10 when Jaws came out.
Well, see, I remember seeing Jaws in the theater. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was scary. And I remember my parents wouldn't take me to see Alien in the theater. Yeah. I was too young. I was like 8 when that came out. So it was right, because it was right after Star Wars. And my dad's not a big fan of Alien, so he didn't care. I only saw it on video, and I didn't like it on video because it was pan and scan, and Alien's the kind of movie to fully appreciate you need to see in the theater.
Oh yeah.
You need to see it projected 35mm. Now you can watch it on Blu-ray and it looks really good. Uh-huh. But it wasn't until you get like high definition widescreen, large screen televisions that they really, really, you can really, really appreciate Alien.
Yeah. That was one you really needed to see in the theater when it came out, the weekend it came out, when everyone was still afraid of those type of movies.
Nobody knew what was going to happen. Nobody knew about the chest burster.
I remember people screaming in that, and then cheering at the end.
Yeah.
Where she jettisons it out.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the scene with, and the other thing is nobody knew what the alien looked like, because they wouldn't, nowadays they put everything in the trailers. But they really restricted the trailers, and they wouldn't let it be shown. And since you didn't have the internet out, you didn't have spy news and that kind of thing. It was very, you could control the information from a movie. Mm-hmm. And the first time I ever saw the alien was actually when they, because they had a toy, Mattel, I think,
or Kenner
made a toy of the alien, which I think is hilarious that a violent R-rated horror film basically had a child's toy to it. And that's where I remember watching those ads and I'm like, oh, so that's what it looks like.
There was a game too.
Was there?
What was it?
Avoid the alien from
It was a board
eviscerating
game.
You. That's awesome.
We did have it. We don't have it anymore.
I remember the ET board game. We had that. I never played it because it was hard to figure out. I recently found my Mad Magazine board game.
Very nice.
From like 1979 or whatever. My kids freaking love that game, and it's fun because it makes no sense, and that's the best part. It's a completely wacky nothing. There's no strategy whatsoever.
No,
it's just all random chance, but it's great for kids. So we play that every now and then. We've brought it out and played that. So
good.
Anyways, we should probably at the very least I should probably introduce the first movie we're going to review.
Definitely.
Which is Hope Springs. In this one, Tommy Lee Jones and Meryl Streep no longer have sex, but maybe Steve Carell can help.
Kay and Arnold, I'm so glad you're here.
Well, that makes one of us.
You two have come here to try to restore intimacy to your marriage.
This is insane. We're not 22 years old anymore.
I would like to assign you your first exercise. Tonight, I would like you to spend a period of time with your arms around one another.
I think we better stop.
I'm going to ask you to take a leap of faith and try something.
I'm looking for sex tips for a straight woman from a gay man.
It's most likely way out of your comfort zone.
I just can't do that.
This one I did not get a chance to see yet because they originally scheduled it to release on Friday. They moved the release date up, which meant that the Wednesday screening they didn't have. Mm-hmm. So our early screening conflicted with the campaign. But you had yours conflict with the Bourne Legacy, correct?
Yeah, ours was to screen last night, and one of our writers did make it to Hope Springs. I have not talked to him yet, but we'll see.
I'm sure it's perfectly charming for old people.
Yeah,
I'm not in that demographic. Let's just say that. I have no interest. I'm going to go see it because I need to review it. But I don't. I mean, it looks like. I mean. They're good actors. I just don't,
Yeah, you have no stake in it, so.
Yep. Yeah, and with that, we're going to go to a break. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We just talked a little bit about Hope Springs, which I actually didn't give a grade because they did screen it for us, so I can't give it the standard preemptive suck for not screening it. It's just that they made us choose, and that's, they've done that sometimes where they'll actually put conflicting screenings because they don't want the press to come to it, I think.
Right, right.
But I think it was just because originally I was going to be able to see it. I just now have to go see it on my own dime.
That's right.
So, looking forward to it. No, I'm not. Anyways, I'm not in the demographic. I'm 40. I'm going to turn 41 next month. But I'm just not old enough yet to care.
that, that movie's like for people who've been married for 30 plus years.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to be a real big fan of Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones, which I am, to want to go.
I'm sure it's perfectly charming. I'm sure it's fine, but it's like the best exotic Marigold Hotel, which is a fine movie. It's just not at all of interest to me at my age.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. And a part of it, I also look at it and say it was like Tommy Lee Jones like doesn't want to have sex, and I'm like, you're a dude. We all want to have, maybe not with geriatric Meryl Streep.
No.
But you know, you're Tommy Lee Jones. You could work something out, I'm pretty sure. Anyways, let's move on to the next movie, which is The Campaign, in which Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis play feuding candidates for North Carolina congressional seat.
Education is our future.
Farmers are this nation's backbone.
Bankers, women,
veterans,
Filipino tilt-a-whirl operators are this nation's backbone.
Salamat.
Gentlemen, we've got some babies to kiss.
That's my baby to kiss.
Stop it! They wanna get
my... He just punched a baby.
Is anyone asking how my hand feels after punching that iron-like jaw of that baby?
Before we actually review this, I want to say I know how to spell Zach Galifianakis' name. thanks to having to write it in so many reviews over the last couple of years.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, first of all, you got a chance to see this, didn't you?
On Monday.
What'd you think?
It was funny. With a few edits, they could have. It will do better at the box office. It had been PG-13.
Okay.
That R rating is going to be a tough sell.
It was pretty crass. I mean, I think they would have had to do a lot of edits.
Yeah, I mean, with the R rating, with the language, with the minor nudity.
Yeah.
I'll be interested to see how it does. These last few R rated movies have not done so well over the summer. Yeah. I mean, minus Ted, which I thought was hilarious.
Ted was great.
But The Watch and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, you know, all these R-rated movies just, you know, it's almost like been the kiss of death.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested. I mean, there are big Will Ferrell, Zach Galifianakis fans who will, you know, they'll turn out for this. But, mm-hmm. But overall, I thought it was funny, you know.
Yeah. Well, see, well, the thing is, though, I think, like, The Watch and Abraham Lincoln, I think, are two different things because Abraham Lincoln was so preposterous. And it was made, it's sort of like Cowboys and Aliens. It has an interest to people into the genre, but outside of the genre, people are like, well, that's just a dumb idea.
And who read the book.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I thought Abraham Lincoln had some pacing issues.
Yeah.
And it had some silliness issues too. And then when it comes to The Watch, I think just The Watch was a hard sell. And it has nothing to do with Trayvon Martin. I think it just has to do with the fact that you're like, oh, it's this overzealous neighborhood watch and boom, aliens. And you're like, what?
Yeah. I never bought that whole Trayvon Martin, you know, we have to rename it. And that just seemed like a stretch.
Yeah.
But no, overall this was pretty funny. If you're looking, you know, if you're looking for this type of movie for the weekend, you know, definitely go see it. Especially if you like Ted, which Ted I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. Well, this one is we've had Campaign. You always right around a presidential election, you'll get political related movies, which are always a stretch because you can't be too partisan in them.
Uh-huh.
Because you'll just, no matter what side you come down on, you're going to alienate half your audience if you're overly partisan in a movie.
Right.
So this one, I thought, what I liked about this one is, even though it all kind of exists within, it all exists within this Republican race, like the Ides of March last year, which existed completely within the Democratic. They didn't do Democrat versus Republican. They were just, they basically made the statement, politics is a smarmy business.
The funniest line. Thing about this movie, because a lot of it rings true.
Yeah,
I mean, especially all their catchphrases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? And I think that's where this is a very well timed movie.
Yes,
And I think in a time this, what if you remember Swing Vote, which came out
four
years ago, the problem with like Swing Vote, and they did what was it? The problem with that one is it was too serious and heartfelt of a message. And they did the one with Robin Williams accidentally getting nominated president. That one just wasn't that good of a movie.
Right.
Man of the Year, wasn't that what that was? This one I think it's a funny movie, and it nails politics. And in a situation like this, if people want serious or not so serious or overly exaggerated political discussions, you can go to the internet for that.
Right. But this, it's almost as if you want to see the two candidates in reality, like, lose their minds. Like, you want to see them snap. So when these guys come out, like, you know, with this, you know, they, by the end, they're having this, like, big Colossus death match.
Oh, yeah. It is not a friendly campaign.
No. And you're like, that's what I want to see happen this campaign. That would actually be kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very. I found it very entertaining. I tend to like Will Ferrell too, and I took a friend of mine who hates Will Ferrell, and he thought it was funny too. I mean, it is a funny, biting movie. And even though both the stars can get on people's nerves, I know there's a lot of people like, I'm tired of Zach Galifianakis or I'm tired of Will Ferrell. I think both of them nail the parts, and you're right in the sense that the R rating might hurt it, just in terms that summer are, but R rated movies do well over the summer. Last year you had both Bridesmaids and the Hangover Part Two did extremely well. I think this one's much more straightforward. I think people know what to expect with this movie.
Sure.
And I think it's going to deliver. And if they had tried to make a PG-13, it just would have been a soft.
Yeah. It's all so box office base now. That was my, I guess that was my one concern.
Yeah.
But otherwise it's hilarious. So, and with these two, you definitely know what you're getting in for.
Well, and the other thing I liked about this movie was they're not afraid to let it get ugly.
No.
Because as you watch this movie, you know, in a weird way, it reminds me of Moonrise Kingdom. I'm the only person who's going to connect these two movies. Whereas in Moonrise Kingdom, I'm not going to spoil anything, but the things escalate amazingly fast at one point in Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh,
And get somewhat violent.
Yes.
But it still works. And when you watch Mozart and Moonrise Kingdom, when you get to that point, you're like, wow, you feel like, well, Will Ferrell and Anchorman, where you're like, wow, that escalated fast.
And fast, right, exactly.
And the same thing happens in this movie, because I'm like, they say what they're going to do, and you're like, are they really going to? And oh, they did it. And then they have a great response to that, which I'm like, bravo for that, because that took some balls as well.
Sure.
So, yeah, I laughed at this movie more than I thought. I know a lot of people were dreading it. I like both Zach Galifianakis, against my better judgment, and Will Ferrell.
Uh-huh.
So I enjoyed it. I have to say, I thought these were it was a well done movie. I'm going to say it rocks.
Yeah,
that's the ratings for Fat Guys. In case you didn't know, it either rocks or it sucks, or it kind of rocks and kind of sucks. So
I'll give it a kind of rocks.
Kind of rocks. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's a great companion piece to The Ides of March, which was my favorite movie of last year, by the way.
Oh.
Did you? I loved The Ides of March because it was so depressing.
Yeah. Oh, by the end? Yeah, it's a big Debbie Downer by the end. Yeah.
It really pulls the veil away from, hey, politics, all, idea. Nope. All gritty, ugly underbelly. That's what it is.
But these are two great movies to bookend. If you're looking for two, political type movies, fair enough.
There you go.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yep. With that, we're going to play the trailer for The Bourne Legacy, in which Jeremy Renner plays another rogue agent trying to survive being eliminated.
There is nothing that you wouldn't do for this country. You have the strength to do what's necessary.
Welcome to the program.
Jason Bourne was the tip of the iceberg.
Who the hell is he?
He's an outcome agent.
He's Treadstone without the inconsistency. We have never seen evaluations like this.
a hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are coming out of the Bourne Legacy trailer. And this is, of course, this is the big movie of the weekend. We'll see how if that is the big movie of the weekend at the end of the weekend.
Of that weekend, right.
Yeah, but first, again, you know, being the gracious host that I am, not to toot my own horn, but I am, I wanted to find out, Michelle, what did you think of The Bourne Legacy?
I really liked it. It's a good fourth chapter in the series.
Yeah.
It runs over 2 hours. Yes. Both hours are almost play as two separate movies.
I hear that, yeah.
It's a very intelligent movie. Good for Gilroy. This is his third movie to directing.
Oh, really? But I didn't realize that this.
We went back and looked, and but he's written all the other Bourne movies.
Yeah.
But so we'll see. You know, I did. I really liked it. Like I said, it does play as two different movies. It's not action packed the whole time, and you're not going on the same journey as you did with Jason Bourne. You know, discovering as he discovered. But it's good. It's a good next chapter in the series.
Yeah. Well, and did he? If I'm not mistaken, the other three Bourne movies were all actually based on the novels.
Correct.
Because The Bourne Ultimatum was an actual novel.
Right.
Them, wasn't it? Okay. So, because this one is. This is the first one that was not based on one of Ludlum's novels. It's just based on the characters.
On the characters. Correct. Correct.
And here's the take on it. I really enjoyed this movie. Yeah. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it. I do see where a lot of the criticism is coming from on the internet. Because you know, us movie reviewers, we're idiots. And we'll just tweet whatever the hell we want after we see a movie. The hell with embargoes kind of thing.
Right, right.
And So there are a lot of people who are just like grinding their toes or their heels onto this movie and complaining about this and that and the other. Here's how you got to look at The Bourne Legacy. The Bourne Legacy is to the Bourne series as Prometheus is to the Alien movies.
Oh, very nice. Good analogy. Yes.
Yeah. Because it's not like them. You know, I mean, it's cut from the same cloth. It exists in the same universe. It has a lot of this connective tissue between the two. But it's not a Bourne movie. It is not this boots on the ground, crazy, frenetic, nonstop action of this guy on a mission.
Yeah, Paul Greengrass, you know, like camera running all over the place, right?
Yeah, and I love the Bourne series. And in fact, I like Greengrass's movies better than Doug Liman's first one. I mean, I like The Bourne Legacy. It was a good movie. Mm-hmm. But I think that Greengrass really kicked it up a notch with those two.
He did.
What Gilroy does is he makes the decision when he was making this. He's like, look, I'm not just going to emulate Paul Greengrass.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a new thing. And it's setting the stage for a whole nother series.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I can see Matt Damon coming back a little bit.
Yeah.
That would be great.
He can show up.
That'd be great if the two met somewhere.
Well, I saw somebody put on Twitter. They said, which is funny, because he wanted it to end with Matt Damon cutting off Jeremy Renner's head and yelling, "There can be only one."
Of course. Well, that was the tagline in the movie. There was never just one, so you might as well go there with it. Although,
exactly.
At the very end, I would have loved to have seen at the very end of the credits a little stinger, maybe of Matt Damon in a coffee shop watching. What was going on in the news?
It'd be great if Matt Damon reads the paper and goes, "What the fuck? This is my gig."
Exactly. Oh, and Jeremy Renner. You know what? This guy, he just totally carries the movie.
He does. He's, you know, I give a lot of props to this guy because
he
came out of nowhere with the Hurt Locker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And even though he's done stuff before, because I remember him from like SWAT.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. God love you.
You know, but I mean, he came out of nowhere with the Hurt Locker. And before that, he really only played dicks.
Yeah.
He did not play heroes until he did the Hurt Locker. And he showed some real chops in terms of empathy and mm-hmm. things. And now he's turning into a bona fide action star.
Yeah.
And he's a hobbit. He made Tom Cruise look tall.
He did.
In MI4.
Oh, I'm so, yeah. Cruise can, he's done with that, I hope, with that franchise. Let Jeremy Renner take the ball and run with it now.
Yeah, and I think what's funny, and there's a scene in The Bourne Legacy where he's running down the hall with Rachel Weisz.
Yeah.
And it really shows how short he is, because I think she's probably in high heels because they always wear high heels.
Right, but he is
and
a very...
they're like the same size.
Yeah, he is. He is.
It reminds me of if you watch like Iron Man and the Avengers, because Gwyneth Paltrow's tall.
Yeah.
She's really tall, and it's not that Robert Downey Jr. is short, but they're about the same height.
Yeah, and then you put Jeremy Renner in with all the Avengers this summer, and he's
a hobbit.
Short in stature, strong in stout, that type of thing.
Yeah, he works with a lot of the shorter actresses because you don't have to put them on apple boxes. Whereas, like, if you watch in what I was going to say about Iron Man is there's scenes where, and there's one particular scene I noticed, they never show Paltrow's feet when she's in her clothes because she's always wearing flats. And then there's a scene where I think this is in Avengers where she's like in cutoff, so she's very casual, so she's like in short jeans and a shirt, and she's like looking eye to eye to Robert Downey Jr., who's I think wearing lifts in his shoes.
Oh yeah, he has.
And she's barefoot, and so they're the same height. So there's always that challenge. But Renner I think works with his co-stars, but I think the guy has, he's going to be the next Tom Cruise. He's going to be the next action star.
Mm-hmm. He so reminds me of Robert Mitchum.
I'll give you that.
You know, he's definitely not a pretty boy.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise kind of, you know, but he just has that, you know, there's just that charisma about him.
Well, he's like Daniel Craig as Bond, yeah, where he's got that rugged sort of snarl.
Yeah.
Sexy.
Kind of like, you know, the little lip thing going up the top lip.
Now when it gets to this movie, the whole thing is there's actually not a lot of action, and in some ways it reminds me of the movie The American with George Clooney.
Which
is, it's a very slow build, and all the but it's not like it's not where the American takes its long times in these slow these slow scenes. There's a lot of things happening in The Bourne Legacy.
Right.
But it's more of a cat and mouse chase.
Yeah, it's very plodding. It takes its time. I mean, from the beginning, and you know, and then you've got the thing going on with the wolves, and there's a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you, if you were disappointed because of the gray,
which I loved.
It's just a good movie. Could have used a little bit of wolf punching in that movie. This movie delivers on that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is we saw a trailer for Taken 2 beforehand, and
you did.
It looks really good. Yeah. I have to say, but I would love it if just at the end of the Taken 2 trailer, he just punches a wolf in the face. They should have totally had that happen. Just be like, it's not in the movie. We just thought we'd throw it in there.
You guys were lucky. We got the trailer for Les Mis, and everybody was like, "What? Why? What?"
Yeah, I don't know what to think of that yet.
You know, it's very Oscar bait. It's very That's going to be at the end of the year, but I would have hoped they would have done Iron Fist, the Russell Crowe, you know, another Universal property coming out.
Yeah,
I was like, that's the trailer that should be in front of Bourne, not the musical Les Mis.
We had a great swatch of Here Comes the Boom, which I don't know, I'm not totally sold on yet. But we also had Skyfall in front of it, and that's where I'm like, oh yeah. They should do, even though they would never do, because it's totally different properties.
Yeah.
They should have a Jeremy Renner Bourne crossover with Daniel Craig as Bond, and just like run into, that would be hilarious to have them just run into each other and be like, "What the? Huh? Okay, move on." But I really do not go to the Bourne Legacy expecting an action movie. Don't even go expecting the full movie, because it's only about 2/3 of the way through do you realize, oh well, this is what they're doing.
Right.
This is the point of this movie, and the greater stuff hopefully will come later. That's if this does well. I don't know if it's going to do well. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's still
it's a gamble.
We're still in the Olympics. A lot of people on the weekends, I'm sorry, they stay home for it, and it's still going up against the Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, but the Dark Knight Rises I don't think it made like 30 some million last weekend.
Yeah.
So it's not like, it's not a huge contender this week.
But we'll see. I mean, optimistically, I would say what, in the 30s?
Yeah.
Maybe a little higher?
I would like to see it do more than that, but right. I think that somewhere in the 30s is probably good. The campaign, I think you're looking at around 30.
Yeah.
And Hope Springs, I think, is like 10 or whatever. I mean, I don't think Hope Springs is going to do well. And partly because it's going to have a front-loaded week because it opened on Wednesday and then Thursday. So you got those 2 days for all the old people to go see it during the matinees. Anyways, about Bourne, I give it a totally rocks.
Totally.
Yeah, but like I said, go in, don't expect an action movie. It's more of that slow. It's like if you put a little bit of action into Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yeah,
that is what.
That was one of my favorite movies last year too.
I see. I respected it. But it's thick. It's tough to watch.
It's one of those where you had to have read the books and appreciated the Alec Guinness series.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, no, I definitely agree with you on Bourne Legacy.
Yeah, I was excited. I hope they make more. This is my prediction on, because like I said, if you talk like the rankings, I have a feeling this is going to play soft. It's not going to be as big as the other Bourne movies. Because it says Bourne, and you watch the trailer looks like it's wall-to-wall action. And there isn't. There's like one good sequence in the somewhere maybe about 20, 30 minutes in. Then there's a really terrifying sequence in the middle that's not exactly action, but it's intense. Mm-hmm. And then there's this massive James Bond chase scene at the end.
That's the first hour is one... It's unto itself, and the second goes off in a different direction, and they're almost like two mini movies put together. But the trailers and the TV spots were really well cut, really well done. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, don't expect to go. You're seeing the Matt Damon movies.
No, you're not. And I think, but if this one doesn't do well, if it's really placed overly soft, they'll still make another one.
Sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if they make another one no matter what. They have Jeremy Renner star in it no matter what, and they replace the director.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not. Probably won't bring back Greengrass. He probably is like, I've done that, you know.
Yeah.
But I could see them putting in, you know, another action director or something like that into it. I think, honestly, as much as I hate Peter Berg as a director,
Battleship.
Battleship. Mahalo, motherfucker. Makes no goddamn sense.
I loved where the movie was released. I love the time where it was released. The beginning of summer, and it was just I have a soft spot for that movie.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of want. I'm going to see it again because obviously it's coming out on Blu-ray in like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Good idea though. I'd have Berg definitely direct. Yeah, like Gilroy, keep writing them, but now it's time to bring in an action director for the next one.
Yeah, Berg, I think, could do it if he has a really, really smart script and actually sticks to it.
Yeah.
Because I know Berg wants to be Michael Bay. You could give the smartest script in the world to Michael Bay, and it's going to be completely rock stupid when he's done. I think Berg can be given a good script.
But Gilroy wrote Armageddon.
Armageddon's not a bad movie.
Love Armageddon. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll defend Armageddon. I won't defend The Island, because the Island is, and I've been through this, The Island is a movie that thinks it's smart. It is like the stupid head cheerleader.
It wants to be Logan's run.
Who really thinks she's smart, but she's not. And she's like, I'm going to be a veterinarian when I grow up, because I like to eat only vegetables. And you're like, that's not what that means. Okay. That is what The Island is. Because The Island, you're right. It tries to be Logan's Run.
Yeah.
It completely rips off Clonus the Parts Horror.
Yeah.
And it also is the dumbest script that's ever been written. And it could have been a smart script.
Yeah.
But it resulted in being really stupid. Because Michael Bay doesn't care about character or dialogue.
When he did Armageddon, Gilroy's on, he wrote it, but there was other people involved in it too, but
the reason Armageddon did well is because the biggest name attached to that was Bruce Willis, not Michael Bay.
And Armageddon, I'm sorry, but I that movie's fantastic.
I love Armageddon. It's like my favorite Michael Bay movie, and that's because he had done The Rock and he had done Bad Boys before that, but that was it. So he still had a lot to prove, and I think directors and actors and anybody in this industry, as long as they've got something to prove. Mm-hmm. that's when they do their best work. Like, yeah. I went back and I watched, because I got on DVD or Blu-ray to review like a year or two ago, Moonstruck.
Oh.
And Nicolas Cage is phenomenal in that movie.
Isn't he?
Because he has something to prove. Yeah. He had like had Valley Girl under his belt, and like that was it. And he's like, I'm not a Coppola, you know, and that's the way it is. But now Nicolas Cage walks in, shits on the floor, and they'd be like, there's your movie.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, part of the reason these, I'm going to dig on The Dark Knight Rises. I think that's one of the reasons why The Dark Knight Rises was not nearly as good as The Dark Knight. Because with The Dark Knight, Nolan had something to prove. With Inception, he had something to prove he could do something completely original, which wasn't original because it was a ripoff of The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
But The Dark Knight, he's like, I mean, he knew he was going to get it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think you got to feel like you got to prove something there.
Yeah.
So.
But I don't know, to an extent, he might, you know, we'll see what happens come Oscar nomination morning, whether the movie, you know, because people.
We're still talking about Christopher Nolan, not Battleship anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry. Yeah. Nice segue for those of you. Yeah.
Let me finish up real quick we'll finish up Bourne Legacy. I have to say this about Jeremy Renner. He's got creepy ass Mickey Rourke fingernails.
Oh.
That does bother me. He does. And I noticed that in the Avengers. And Rachel Weisz looks so hot in glasses.
She's, I really like her. I'm glad.
There's a scene where she's wearing glasses. Oh my God, she looks so cute.
Mrs. James Bond.
Yeah, so. She likes the rugged guys. I think those will be good. Now, what were you saying about, now move on to Christopher Nolan.
Oh, with The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises and Inception, we'll see how well the Academy, you know, well, not that he hasn't received a nomination before, but as far as for The Dark Knight, for The Dark Knight Rises and for him being a director, we'll see how that all plays out. You know, it's always one thing what critics and the public, their take on it, as opposed to what the Academy and the guilds take on it. So,
well, in the Academy right now, they're all going to see Hope Springs right now, because they're totally in that demographic.
they have the new president coming in, so they have the new regime coming in.
Yeah, I've heard people say, you know, would you think, I've been asked that on the radio, do you think that Dark Knight Rises is going to get nominated for an Oscar? I'm like, no, not at all.
No.
It's not his best movie.
I agree.
I think, because then they're like, well, what about for body of work for the whole Batman? I said, first of all, no one was even saying anything close to the Academy Awards for Batman Begins.
No.
And it doesn't deserve it. It's a good Batman movie. It was not the best of 2005. It was not nearly the best of anything. The Dark Knight was a fantastically done film. It was a perfect storm with the Heath Ledger thing.
Yeah.
This one, it's Batman Begins again. It's a decent Batman film, but it's loaded with problems.
Yeah.
It's too long. It did very well, but there's nothing to it that makes people feel like they need to revere it necessarily.
And quite frankly, Ampus members, to them, it's a Batman movie.
Yeah.
It is not.
Dark Knight didn't even get nominated, and that one, if there was ever going to be one, it was going to be that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why they changed the rules.
Yeah, and when people like talk, because I've heard people say, well, wait, like Lord of the Rings, you know, all three Lord of the Rings, I believe, were nominated for Oscars for Best Picture.
Yeah.
So right there, you've got a pedigree. Second of all, you can make, even though it wasn't my favorite, Return of the King wasn't my favorite, you can make the argument that Return of the King was the best of the three.
Right, and he shot them all at the same time. Jackson did all of them, you know. He did all of them at the, it was based on a classic work of, you know, of fiction. And this is a whole different, The Dark Knight Rises is a whole different ball game. I think it'll see a lot of love from the guilds and the technical categories.
Yeah, but even then, I'm in several critic organizations. It doesn't stand a ghost of a chance of winning anything.
No,
I don't feel any of my critic organizations that I'm involved in are going to lean towards that at all. And plus, to sit there and talk Oscars end of the year stuff in August is completely stupid anyways, because most of the movies that get there, you're going to have those movies at the end where Harvey Weinstein's saying, this is the best, you must vote for this. Right. And everyone's going to be like, yes, you're right. King's Speech, The Artist. And then they stand back like 6 weeks later and be like, wait a minute, The King's Speech wasn't the best movie of that. It wasn't even close. Same thing with The Artist. You'd be like, what did we do? What sort of mind control does Harvey Weinstein have on us?
Yeah. The Artist, it was just so unique. It was so different. And remember, it's Academy members voting. So, and a lot of it is they're voting for their friends.
But I think also it's like everyone wants to. It's sort of like, you know what it is? It's like saying you voted for Obama to prove you're not racist. Mm-hmm. Like, no, I like the Artist.
Yeah.
I'm still relevant. I like The Artist because I love black and white movies.
You know, and it's feel good movies. Sometimes, you know, it's how you come out of the movie. You know, at the end, The King's Speech had that feel good moment. Chariots of Fire had that feel good moment at the end. You know.
Yeah, but they don't like too depressing. I mean, like Dragon Tattoo. That's just a romp. But that was snubbed. The Academy also doesn't like graphic rape either.
No, that wasn't, no.
So, like, Rape the Musical, I don't think that's going to win.
No, well, yeah. Like last year's Shame. There was no way. Shame, the director, Fassbender, there's no way.
I love what they said. Was the NC-17? I think the movie hurt its chances.
Oh, yeah. When I was at the Academy covering the nominations earlier this year, talking to some people there, they watched Academy members walking out of the screenings and saying, walking out even before the movie was finished.
Well, that's never a good sign.
And right there, right. But, you know, in 2013, just to take, you know, there's a lot of movies now that have left 2012 and the studios have pushed to 2013 already.
Yeah, this is moving into the next thing, which is pushing movies to the Well, the first really big one I think was it. Well, it's not that they've moved. It's like we've gotten a bunch of news about that very recently.
Yeah.
The first one I think was G.I. Joe.
Yeah, that was a perfect summer movie. I'm sorry, but
yeah. Well, it's like we're gonna move it from a release date that pretty much guarantees at least $100 million to a release date that, if we're lucky, will make 70.
Yeah, I get the whole, we need to convert it to 3D because 3D does better in Europe and overseas, but it's just such a summer popcorn flick type of, you know.
Yeah.
So that was,
well, the conversion, we'll see what happens as it goes, because there was a bump with the 3D in America, because that's where they really kind of test marketed it. And then everybody saw the 3D, and then it leveled out. Mm-hmm. And now it's not... People aren't seeing movies because they're in 3D. They're not seeing. The only reason they're not seeing movies because they're in 3D is they don't want to pay the surcharge.
Yeah.
But you had a leveling out, and right now we're in the bump overseas. But eventually, that's going to level out too.
That's going to
it's not
out.
The novelty, and it's still good. And like certain movies, like Avatar, benefited from the bump and in America, and I think the Avengers overseas benefited from it just being that big push for 3D. Yeah.
I think it should just be, I think it should just be a treat, you know, an exception, not the rule that everything has to be 3D and converted to 3D. And, you know, because a lot of it's still so dark when you see it.
It depends on where you got to know your theaters. I've seen it. It really does. There are some theaters I know do not project properly and some theaters I know that do.
Right.
And you got to go to the ones that project properly. The average rank and file person doesn't know that.
Yeah. But there was, and just recently, The Great Gatsby. They just announced that was going to be.
That I do not understand. Now, like, see, I can get G.I. Joe. And the other thing with G.I. Joe, with like the conversion to 3D, you cannot make, there's no argument you can make where converting it to 3D is ruining the artistic integrity of G.I. Joe. It's a G.I. Joe sequel, for Christ's sake. It's exactly. Meant to be that 3D popcorn movie. Great Gatsby, though, if I'm not mistaken, he shot that in 3D, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not like have to go through a conversion process. The other reason why moving that makes no goddamn sense is because that is an award season end-of-the-year movie.
It is. And to move it to the summer? And they're moving it to the summer.
It's not, and it's not a summer movie. I think it's going to get lost. It's like Hugo. Hugo wasn't a huge mainstream hit.
Oh, but, and I loved Hugo. Wow.
Oh yeah, I loved Hugo. It was one of my favorites of the year. However, if Hugo had come out in the summer, it would have just disappeared.
It would have gotten lost. And now, and the original Great Gatsby, you know, once again showing my age, was a summer release.
Yeah.
And my mom took me to that back in 1974. And
See, I love Baz Luhrmann. I think his movies, I think, are even something like Australia, which is kind of a mess, and
there's a lot of problems. Epic.
Well, you know what Australia was? If this is what Australia felt like, it felt like it was he wanted to make two movies, but he knew damn well he wasn't going to be allowed to.
No,
he knew it wasn't going to be a big hit, so he's like, well, we'll just make it all one movie. Because I mean, there's literally a part in the middle where you
Kling, it does. You it kind sever. Of like yeah, it's like they put on the brakes. I'm like, what? Whoa, it's I just didn't see the need to remake The Great Gatsby. It's already been done twice before.
Yeah.
So
think he's going to put his own. See, because I think his Australia was a diversion from. I mean, if you talk about like Romeo and Juliet and Moulin Rouge, are so high concept and so visual and so they're that red curtain, stuff. Australia wasn't as much. Australia was a little more of a grounded movie. Mm-hmm. It wasn't this very high concept, you know, hyper realism. I think you're going to get that. I think he's taking that and putting it to the Great Gatsby.
Yeah. Oh, I have, and I love Baz Luhrmann too. So I have no doubt this is going to look beautiful. I mean, Australia just on the big screen was so sweeping. It was just, it was a gorgeous movie. And all his movies are, I mean, you know, and in part to his, you know, his wife.
it's his theatrical background, too.
Yeah.
He wears a scarf in every interview. Of course they're going to look fabulous.
Thank God for Catherine Martin.
But have you noticed that every interview you ever see of him, he wears a scarf. He's such a theater dude. I think that.
And another movie that got moved, which I just saw, and they had screened it quite a bit here in the Midwest, was Gambit.
Okay.
The remake
with that guy who's in that movie that came out
not too long ago. In The King's Speech.
Oh, Colin Firth.
Thank you. Thank you.
You mean the best movie from 2 years ago?
Oh, don't even get me started how much I love The King's Speech.
I like The King's Speech. It wasn't the best movie of the year, though.
But no, it's like...
That's me at the end of every year. Every year, it's like always like... It's like... It was always sucked when there was 5 nominees. That's why I like the 10 nominees, because at least I can get behind one of them. Because I remember, what was the year it was like Munich was up? And Munich was a good movie, but it wasn't best of the year.
But it got nominated.
I remember
nominated.
Looking at it. I was like, well, none of these are the best movies.
Nah. I think they should just stick with the 5. Go back to the 5 and, you know... That's what made it the Academy Awards, the big, you know.
See, I think what they should do for the Oscars, and I've said this before, I said they should make it should be a 90-minute show. They should have like somebody like Ricky Gervais MC and have no oversight on him.
No. Oh, wouldn't that be great?
But the thing is, you see the movies and like people, it's all stuffy. It's all like, oh, look how smart we are. And then what they should do is they should give everybody free alcohol.
Oh, well, but that's...
Because it's only fun when they're drunk.
That's the Golden Globes. See, that should be just for the Golden Globes.
Oh, really? I remember there was one year I was watching the Academy Awards, because it's not just the Golden Globes. It was before Kim Basinger won her Oscar.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking the 80s sometime. And she was a presenter, and she was on some. she's standing there and she's like sort of like twitching a little bit, and the person says something and she just goes "dah," just like makes this noise, and you're just like, what the hell just happened to you? She was in her own little world.
Was that the days when Johnny Carson was still hosting?
I don't remember who hosted there. It could have been. It was a presenter. And now they've got the thing where like they have presenters for presenters. They're like, I'd like to present the next presenter. And you're like, I remember a couple of years ago when we had the writer's strike and I was talking to somebody and they're like, do you think it's going to be a shorter Oscar ceremony? I'm like, no, it's going to be longer because it's going to be nothing but montages. And he's like, really? I'm like, yeah. And then we're watching it and he's like, yep. It's just montage after montage. The moving movies to that and on top of it, stuff like splitting the Hobbit into three movies.
Oh, talk about a money.
That's just crass at that point. I mean, it's like the book's not even 300 pages.
No, it's the shortest.
The book is literally shorter than three screenplays would be.
That's become the big thing. Let's take one book now and make it into two or three parts.
Yeah. Really? Well, see, this is the thing. I'm curious to see. I this is a gamble for Warner Brothers.
Oh,
because first of all, it's been 8 years since The Return of the King.
Mm-hmm.
So even though there's a lot of excitement for The Hobbit,
uh-huh.
does that translate to the mainstream crowd?
Yeah, you're hoping that those people that shelled out their money multiple times are going to return.
Yeah, I mean, are you going to have the people attending it? Because, I mean, you can release, and they're re-releasing like in a week or two, another Blu-ray version of The Lord of the Rings. And you're going to get people buying that shit.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but the number of people buying that, you need a lot more than that to make a movie a hit.
Oh, yeah.
So if people go to this movie, it may not do well.
No.
And it may do, it'll probably do well overseas, but it may not do well. And then they're talking about the whole 48 frames per second, and I'm curious to see what that looks
like. Yeah, everybody keeps saying, though, it's got a very video quality to it.
Yeah, well, and that's the way it is, and the reason you know this is because if you set your TV or your Blu-ray uh-huh. player properly, you can make fantastic movies look like they're shot on soap operas.
Yeah, oh
like,
yeah,
even
I've seen
old
this
ones
before.
That were shot on film.
It kind of blows the mind when you're watching it.
Well, what's funny is we had a blackout about a month ago
mm-hmm.
in Columbus. Did you get those storms? Because you're from the Midwest.
We got a taste of it, but it passed over us and all the power outages were you guys. And
it was us. The entire city was gone. and so I think it reset everything on my TV and Blu-ray player. So when I watched all the Bond movies with my kids. Uh-huh. So we did a Bondathon, and the DVDs played fine, but I put in the Blu-ray of it was like The Man with the Golden Gun, I think.
Oh, okay.
And my son immediately, God bless him, because he's I'm raising him right, he immediately noticed it looked like video. And you're watching it and you're like, because this was obviously shot on film because it was from like 1973.
Uh-huh.
Obviously shot on film.
Yeah, of course.
And it looked like it was cheap VHS.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had to go in. I finally found the settings.
You're like, what the
to
heck?
To change it. Oh, it was so frustrating because we lost the remote too. So I'm on the TV pushing the buttons because all the stuff's to the remote and I can't find the goddamn, I don't know where the hell that remote went.
Did you find it?
I finally was able to find it because it was one of these default settings on the Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
Actually, I finally found it where it's like smooth motion and it's good for sporting events,
right? But not.
But it makes movies.
No,
look
not
terrible.
When you're watching a film like that was shot on film.
Yeah, but amazingly, it looks bad, and it's the frequency of frames mm-hmm. that does that a lot. So, I'm curious to see what I've heard bad things about the Hobbit,
mm-hmm.
The look of it. I don't know how because the thing is, Lord of the Rings worked because it was in fact an actual book. But to sit there and be like, well, this is just the first couple chapters.
Correct. Yeah, and I still, in my heart of hearts, would have loved to have seen the Guillermo del Toro version.
Yeah.
That would have been...
yeah, so we'll see.
I think that would have been amazing. Yeah. Yeah, so a lot coming up next year.
Well, and then you've got the other release. The other thing I want to kind of weigh in on is, of course, Joss Whedon.
Yay!
Getting signed to do Avengers 2.
So happy to see that yesterday.
I guess my question is, are they going to make two movies of Avengers? Is Avengers 2 going to be split into two movies? Avengers 2.1.
No,
the thing. I mean, and people who listen to the show know I'm not a big fan of Joss Whedon. And I'm a fan of what he's done. I hate Firefly. I hate. Never got into Buffy. I thought Dollhouse was terrible. Dollhouse was okay, but then when that it was it was just okay, and then it went very Whedon-y, and then I really hated it.
I'm wincing.
But I loved Cabin in the Woods, which arguably is Drew.
Wasn't that
Drew
fabulous? That movie started as one movie, and then by the end, it's another.
I loved Cabin in the Woods. One of my favorite of the year. Yes. And I know that's mostly Drew Goddard's, but it definitely has the Joss Whedon influence on it. I mean, it's clear you can watch it and be like, and you said, "Oh, that's a Joss Whedon movie." You're like, "Oh yeah, that makes sense." That he produced and co-wrote it. And I loved the Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So the stuff he's done this year, I'm a big fan of. It's one of these things. I even said this. I wrote an article on Film School Rejects about what he should do next. And here's the thing with Joss Whedon. This is both a blessing and a curse for him to do Avengers 2. Mm. Because you know, because I even had a conversation with somebody online about this. You know he's going to make Avengers 2, and they're going to expect $200 million its opening weekend.
Oh, yeah. They're going to, huge.
This movie could make $450 million domestically and be considered soft.
Soft, yes.
I mean, there are going to be people who be like, "Well, it only made $450 million.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's doing the Shakespeare movie next. He's doing the Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah.
That's still he's the writer on it, but
I would go as far to say probably William Shakespeare was the writer.
Yeah.
Do you think that's fair to say?
True. But he's not directing it, so there. Yeah.
Yeah. William Shakespeare. I think he's gone, but maybe the Earl of Bucket or whatever his name was.
No. Well. Yeah. Good point about directing the next Avengers, but
it's. I mean, I think he would be stupid to not do it.
No, he's got to do it.
But I mean, there's a lot of danger in this because, like I said, if it just makes $150 million its opening weekend. People would be like, well, it's not. And here's the thing with the Avengers. It also depends on how the other movies leading up to it do. Mm-hmm. Because that was part of it. Because people look at it and say, the Avengers, boom, there you go. And well, the Avengers had five prequels.
Oh, yeah. We've got another Thor in there.
We got another Thor coming up, another Captain America. They're developing Ant-Man. I don't know if that's going to be released first. You got Iron Man 3 coming up. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they fast track a Hawkeye movie if there's a little bit of bump from Born Legacy because they want to cash it on Renner. Who God knows what else is coming up? So much can happen that's completely out of his control that could soften the series.
I'll be really interested to see how his Much Ado About Nothing that he is directing, writing, and producing. It's going to show at Toronto here in September. Yeah. And then there's no release date past. They have it very vague as 2012. So yeah. I'll be interested. People are going to be like, wait a minute. Is this the same director who did The Avengers?
Well, yeah, but here's the other thing and this is not to take anything away from what Joss Whedon did with The Avengers. Mm-hmm. People did not see The Avengers because Joss Whedon was involved. People saw The Avengers because it was The Avengers.
Right.
They saw The Avengers because it had Iron Man and Thor.
It's like saying people... I went to see War of the Worlds a couple of years ago, not because Tom Cruise was in it. Yeah. It was because it was Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of...
It's like if you go back to the original Star Wars movie, nobody saw... I don't think there's anybody out there that saw Return of the Jedi. It was like, I can't wait to see what Richard Marquand did. In fact, most people don't even know who directed Return of the Jedi.
No.
Yeah.
No. Nope.
So that's not to say, I mean, Whedon did a great job with Avengers 2, but yeah, there's some giant bear traps he's got to navigate around.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think it's going to make $600 million domestically. It could. That's not impossible, but most likely it's going to do well, but it's not going to be this juggernaut.
Yeah.
That because again there's this kind of first to market type thing. This was that very first one. It's kind of like when DC's developing the Justice League, you're like, they realize the Justice League is not going to make $600 million.
No. Now they're just like, Warner Brothers is like, shit, we got to hurry up and get going here.
Yeah. So I mean, I wish the best of luck to Whedon, but you know, this could be a day, because the other thing is, Because in essence, I mean, I know it's not, but in essence, this is sort of his direct. This is like being the first time director. Because even though he did a lot of TV work,
no, this
and
was
he
a
did
big...
direct Serenity. He did direct Serenity, but nobody remembers.
No, yeah, and he was very nervous. I mean, when they first announced he was directing Avengers, that was like one of the first things out of his mouth. How scared he was to do this, and how it would be received, and you know.
And second movies, even though it'll be like the 10th movie, the second movies are always tough. I mean, look at Iron Man 2. A lot of people people thought that Jon Favreau was like the second coming for superhero movies when he directed the first Iron Man. And now people are real soft on him because
Favreau's like,
two.
I just want a part as
Cowboys
the chauffeur again. Leave me out of it.
Yeah, exactly. But, and you same thing happened with the same thing happens with like the Matrix sequels. They're like the Matrix is the biggest thing in the world, and then people dumped all over the sequels.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how Cloud Atlas turns out for him.
You know, I've watched the introduction.
Yeah.
Where the three of them are talking about it. But I haven't. I don't want to watch it. I don't like watching trailers. I don't like watching concept. Even it's when they're like, "Oh, 10-minute trailer," and I'm like, "I don't want to see that. It's going to give away too much."
I live for trailers. I do. I love trailers.
I love trailers. I just don't want
Avengers
to see it before I see the
movie. That movie. We're talking like 12-15, maybe. So it's still a ways off.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens between. Yeah. Well, that could happen between now and then.
Yeah, well, who knows? And I mean, like I said, I wish the best for him.
Oh,
for that,
sure.
So. But, you know, from between now, we got plenty of stuff in 2013.
Oh, yeah. Oh, huge.
Yes. Shall we move on to the Fat Guy 5?
Yes,
Was please. There anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, that was it. No? Those were...
You're good.
What did you think of... Overall, what did you think of Prometheus?
I love Prometheus.
Okay. Good.
I'm a huge fan of Prometheus, and the reason I love Prometheus was because it was smart sci-fi.
Yes,
and I know people disagree. Oh, it's not
no, I love that. I love that term.
And I love the fact that, well, first of all, it was visually stunning. In fact, of all the movies I've seen in IMAX this year, that is the one that blew my socks off.
That's amazing. I can't wait for the Blu-ray.
Oh yeah, I can't. I'm really excited for the Blu-ray. I mean, like The Dark Knight Rises, it looks cool in IMAX. Prometheus blew my socks off.
Isn't it? Cinematography. It just it's a prequel, but it's not a prequel.
Yeah,
it's got its own. Yeah,
I thought the cast was fantastic. I thought Fassbender was amazing.
Isn't he?
I thought Noomi Rapace was adorable in it, even when she was covered in blood.
And doing the self cesarean on her.
Yeah, that was that.
Good night.
I took my 9-year-old to see that. Oh. He was 8 at the time, actually, because no, he may have just turned 9 because his birthday was. He was cool with it.
Yeah,
didn't have a problem.
Yeah.
People freak out about too much stuff. I mean, because I told people, they're like, you just let him see that. I'm like, it's a movie. He knows
it's not right.
It's not real.
Right.
You know, and it's like, actually, I took my 11-year-old to see The Bourne Legacy, and the laboratory scene I thought was was even more intense. than the operation scene in Prometheus, because it's so visceral.
Yeah. And it's so relatable. It's just because it's obviously set here on Earth. And it's,
yeah.
You know, it's people. But, no, Prometheus, it didn't talk down to the audience. It lent itself to you figuring it out, or you drawing your own conclusions. And, you know, I love Ridley Scott across the board.
Well, and the thing with Ridley Scott, I'm like, cause people were like, it was that thing where I after seeing it, I understood why he said it's not an alien. Don't take it. He didn't say it's not an alien prequel. Mm-hmm. What he said was, don't treat it like an alien.
Right. We're not going to. But eventually, it will have to somehow, maybe.
If it's in.
Bring us up to the pre-launch of the Nostromo, or I'm hoping. I would love it.
I mean, there's a lot to it. And I think But I remember when I saw it, I said, if you look at this guy's filmography, mm-hmm. first of all, he doesn't do sequels.
No.
He doesn't.
He does. He does director's cuts.
Yeah, he'll do the same movie over again. But he doesn't do sequels, but also all of his movies are different.
Yeah.
So to expect this to be like the movies, if you take the other four Alien movies, and let's just talk Alien mm-hmm. right now, let's not do the whole Alien versus Predator element, but if you take the Alien movies, they're essentially the same movie.
Uh-huh.
They're all a big giant monster attacking people in a limited environment.
Yeah, yeah.
They're either on a ship or they're on a planet. That's for whatever reason very constrained, whether it's because it's a colony or because it's a prison. But that's all. It's a monster in the house. That's yeah. really what they are. So why would he do another Monster in a House movie?
Mm-hmm.
So he did something grand in scope. And there are people who like complain about, like, there's a scene in there where she like looks at the DNA and she's like, oh, it's the same. And then people are like, wait, does it mean this? And I'm like, seriously, you wanted to sit through a 20-minute lecture on DNA and mitochondrial DNA and right. how evolution works? And blah. No, it's just boop, beep, beep, lights go on in this thing. And it's like, oh, it's this DNA.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand it's not. Or all the complaints people had with Prometheus, I think, are excusable.
Yeah.
Unlike The Dark Knight, which some of them
don't. Some of them, it's just like, oh, geez.
Like, there are people say, why they take their helmets off? I go, because... They spend half the damn movie in spacesuits.
Yeah.
And first of all, it's a logistics thing, so the faces don't fog up.
Yeah.
To shoot. Second of all, if MGM was making a big deal because Tom Cruise wore an eye patch in Valkyrie, you know that the studio was saying, "Well, do we really want to cover people's faces this yeah. whole time?" And I'm like, it's an excuse to get their helmets off.
And they explained it. He was like, you know, it says the air's, breathable, so yeah. might as well take them off.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, yeah, that wouldn't happen, but they also wouldn't have sound in space. I did not hear anyone complain that there was sound in space mm-hmm. in this movie. So if you're not going to complain about sound in space, don't complain about ways around the reality of science to just mm-hmm. make it a coherent film.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I love Prometheus.
But and I'll be interested to see his next movie that he's directing, The Counselor, comes out next year. Mm-hmm. It's with Michael Fassbender and Brad Pitt and Javier Bardem, and you know, so I can't wait for that. I mean, and it's a huge A-list cast. So yeah. You know, he'll take a break from Prometheus, and I would love to see him return to it again, you know, down the road.
Yeah, I do think it'd be fun to have James Cameron do a sequel, but we can't wait for 2025.
Oh, no. He's got all those Avatar movies coming out.
That's another one, like the Avengers. I'm real curious to see what happens with Avatar, because Avatar 2 could make $1.5 billion worldwide, mm-hmm. and it would be considered a disappointment.
A disappointment.
that's the thing, and that's the other thing, like with Avengers 2, and this is where I think Cameron's playing a dangerous game. Because he keeps up in the ante.
Yeah.
In Avengers 2, the worst thing that could happen would be to greenlight a $300 million script.
Oh, yeah.
And they would, too. Because if you look at... And Disney's done this. They did this with the pirate movies. The pirate movies were $200 to $250 million for the sequels.
They spent.
Because they were so expensive to do.
Yeah.
And they Pirate 2 did so well. I think the third one was like $300 million mm-hmm. for the production. And you're like, it has to make $600 million worldwide just to break
just
even.
To break what even. If it's just... And never mind what they spend on the publicity for it.
Oh yeah, whatever that turns into. Yeah, and that's the thing with Avengers 2 is you're like, you know, I mean, they shouldn't even greenlight. I'm sorry, you have to sit there and look. Disney, at some point, Disney and Joss Whedon should look and be like, there's no reason we should spend more than $200 million to make this.
No,
movie.
They should, right, right. And
but they might.
God knows what Fox is going to spend now on the Avatar 2. And that's not even coming out till like 2015 now.
Oh, it's ridiculous how, and so, because I remember, wasn't Avatar 2's budget like $260 million? Oh. Or Avatar was like $260 million?
Yeah, something astronomical.
And the reason it was profitable because it was so profitable of a film, but maybe Avatar sequels tend to be front loaded,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I mean, it would be like when they made The Dark Knight Rises, at least that one wasn't a huge jump in the budget because it made $1 billion. So they can be like, well, if on those we can make a $350 million and we'll still make money back. And you're like, yeah, it's maybe not a smart move.
they you got to produce a movie like the Tyler Perry movies. They're done for like what? A $2 million budget, or
they're made for lunch and a couple, and you know, a couple coupons.
They rake in like, you know, and then the box office comes out. Oh, Tyler Perry movie, $60 million for the weekend. It's like, oh, see.
Well, yeah. Well, and it is, and that's why the one thing that's nice about these huge budget movies is we haven't seen a found footage movie in a while, which is nice.
Well, you got Paranormal Activity coming out soon.
I can forgive Paranormal Activity because that's all they were. What I can't stand are movies where I'm waiting for the Marvel movie, the Marvel Studios movie that's a found footage film. Because you know it's coming.
Oh, yeah.
And that doesn't count because I hated Chronicle. I know I'm not with a lot of people on that one, but I hated Chronicle.
Yeah, that was far-fetched. That was a bit... much.
I won't go into it because I've complained enough. Yeah. So are we good? Are we ready to go to the Fat Guy Five?
Yes, please.
All right. This is in honor of Hope Springs. I keep wanting to say Hope Floats. Because to me, it sounds like it's going to float. Yeah. Like something else floats.
Yeah.
Anyways, this is five actors and actresses we'd never like to see have sex. In honor of not wanting to watch Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones. Maybe Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones in the 70s would have been... I don't even know if I really wanted to see it. I don't think she's that pretty.
Yeah.
Like, really, really early. I mean, we're talking like what was that? Did she do Annie Hall or Manhattan, like, in the late 70s? She could pull off pretty there.
But having seen her earlier this year at the Oscars and at a couple of the symposiums and very up close... She's still very pretty.
See, I don't find her pretty at all. I mean, she may have taken good care of herself. I mean, for a woman,
well,
she's like one in her 90s now, something like that.
A couple other people who were there with me said, yeah, she's had a little face work done.
Everybody's had a little face work done. I just watched all those Marilyn Monroe movies in the Forever Marilyn collection.
Oh,
and I'm watching The Misfits, which was made, she was like 35 or 36 when she made that. And this is before plastic surgery, so she was starting to look old.
Yeah.
I'm not old, but you could see where her chin, her neck was getting saggy. And, you know, her breasts were still look fantastic, right. but her body, she'd gained a little weight. And she was still adorable. But see, back in those days, you started losing your looks in the 30s.
You did.
You can push it. You can push it a little bit, but.
But now?
Yeah. Speaking of that, I would want to. One thing I noticed with the Bourne Legacy, talk about somebody who's had work done is Rachel Weisz. She has had a neck tuck done that literally looks like she's being choked out.
Yeah, she looked. There was something. I did. That's a good point. I did notice something. But
her jawline was like almost perpendicular.
Yeah. And I mean, she's very thin and she looked. Her cheekbones looked a little gaunt, but.
But you go back and you watch something like Chain Reaction, which I saw not too long ago, you can tell it's not the same woman. She might be a robot. But put glasses on her and she's adorable.
And she's adorable, yeah.
Anyways, five actors and actresses we'd never like to see have sex. And I made this list, but you can sound off all you want. This is my go-to list. This is my go-to example of this would be, and they're not like couples or anything. They're just like, I picked two actors and actresses, a couple that... I would least want to see. I don't want to see either of them naked.
Never mind. I don't want to see them.
I don't want to see them naked and rubbing up against each other. Gary Shandling and Sandra Bernhardt.
Oh, ow.
Which it's just they're both nasty looking people.
Yeah.
Ugh. I don't know if there's just not much to say about these. It's just you got to throw these out. The next one. This is the only one I took. Who's dead? And I don't want to see him dead or alive. But the old fat version of Marlon Brando and like Linda Hunt. Is she still alive?
Oh, it's just the size differential going on.
She would disappear. And she, you just see these two like feet sticking out from either side.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about the year of living dangerously.
Oh, very good. Good intention.
Aha. See, the young Marlon Brando, he was a good looking dude.
Oh. I mean,
Mm-hmm. You can see that, but something happened. He pulled a Albert Finney.
Just exploded. He pulled an Orson Welles.
That's right. And now this one is actually something we could actually end up seeing in a movie. It's not an unrealistic one out there. Steve Buscemi and Melissa Leo.
Yeah, that one you could. Hey, if she could show up on Boardwalk and
yeah,
Boardwalk Empire.
Would you've seen the meth picture of Steve Buscemi, where the progression of meth, where you've seen those ads where it shows the arrest record of this woman.
Yes. Oh.
And she turns into this skanky hag. Yeah. Well, they have one and she turns into Steve Buscemi. It's very funny. And then like Melissa Leo, did you see Red State?
No. I did
she
not.
She plays sort of like, well, she plays one of the cult members, but she poses as a prostitute to get people in so they can kill them in the cult. And I'm like, she's like the daytime prostitute from My Name is Earl. Oh. I don't know what the cutoff number, like if you show up and like, you got like Jessica Biel.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, I can see definitely that shelling out a couple $100. Uh-huh. But it makes you wonder, where do you get the Walmart or the dollar store discount? I mean, what is the... See, like, well, you really, really want to have sex, but you don't have a woman to have sex. It's Melissa Leo. I'd be like,
Yeah, well, when she showed up 2 years ago to win the Oscar in that doily-looking dress, she just... she looks a little... But, oh, she and Steve Buscemi. Oh, my God. Well, yeah, and what kills me is to see Steve Buscemi and Kelly MacDonald together on Boardwalk Empire. I'm like, wow, that's... Wow.
Because Kelly MacDonald's so adorable.
Oh, I know. And you're like... Oh, yeah.
Makes me want to go watch Trainspotting again, which is naked and having sex with Ewan McGregor.
McGregor, yeah, there you go.
The next one is these. This is for TV fans out there. This would be Jack McBrayer and Rachel Dratch. Now, do you know who Jack McBrayer is?
No.
He is the wide-eyed, happy-go-lucky intern from 30 Rock.
He was in the campaign. Yeah,
he was in the campaign. He played the overly conservative father.
Oh.
Because he would just be so happy. And Rachel Dratch, who I'm sure is a charming person.
It's the whole neck thing. I'm sorry.
But you know what? I give Rachel Dratch a lot of credit because
she's so funny though.
She's hilarious and she understands. She's like, she knows she is not an attractive person. I remember I watched this interview with her once and she was talking about there was a scene where they needed it was either an audition or it was like a thing on Saturday Night Live and they're like, well, we need girls to look homely, and they a lot of times there's the standard thing in Hollywood where they take really attractive girls and they do their hair differently and give them glasses to make them look dorky, but you can tell they're totally hot. Uh-huh. And they like gave Rachel Dratch like two, what are those things you put in? Barrettes? Uh-huh. They put two barrettes in her hair and they're like, okay, you're good. And she's like, wait a minute. She's like, I'm two barrettes away from being hideously ugly.
I'm like, they put her in the Jennifer Aniston Just Go With It movie. And then she shows up and That's My Boy, the Adam Sandler movie. I'm
I love her. I wish. I am hoping that Rachel Dratch gets her moment in the because I think she's a brilliant comedian.
I do too. I'm with you on that one.
And I also think she actually, for as weird looking as she is quite adorable when, because she's always playing a weirdo. And so she always plays this, but you see her in interviews and she kind of comes alive and she's very cute actually in interviews. So
it'd be nice to see her in something a little. Yeah.
It's sort of like Michelle Rodriguez. In every movie she's in, she just looks like she would just like, she just looks just unappealing. I mean, she's pretty. She in a very sort of butch sort of way, but she always just looks mean, but you see in her interviews and she's just adorable in interviews.
Yeah. But you know, if when you're in, you know, battling aliens in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Or on Lost. Everything.
Or on Lost.
You know, I mean, I'm sure she's adorable when she's drunk driving.
Oh, you had to go there.
Of course I had to go there. These entitled celebrities. What the hell? And then the final one, this is also in relation to this weekend. This would be Zach Galifianakis and anyone else on the planet.
Now there's your Hobbit.
Yeah. Yeah. He is a weird looking dude. Now, I mean, he's funny, but yeah, I don't want to see him because I realize I'm trying to think of somebody to pair him up with. And I mean, you could have him have sex with Jessica Alba and I wouldn't want to see that.
No.
It's bad enough if I watch pornography. I'm sharing a little too much.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay.
But especially, and they did this a lot. It's a lot different now. I'm talking through the nuance of modern pornography.
Yeah, like, yeah. Now it's, yeah.
On like these point of view things, you don't see, but always in like the 90s, which is where I did, that's where I really kind of cut my teeth on pornography, we'll say. They'd have these guys, they had sex, but they still try to make them somewhat cinematic.
Yeah.
So they have these scenes and they shot it because the guys, for it to really work is the male fantasy. And this is not a homophobic thing. It's just your fantasy is to have sex with a girl.
Uh-huh.
And you picture yourself in that, in there.
Right.
You picture yourself with a giant Peter North penis, you know, that's like 18 inches long, which isn't true, but, but you picture yourself and you're like, yeah, you're so excited. And then they cut to the guy going, ooh, and you're just like, you're like, okay, can we cut away from this? I understand you need to do cutaways, but okay. You're just lingering way too long. Can we get back to the stuff I'm interested in? Did I share too much?
That the whole TMI segment? No.
TMI?
It's hard TMZ. To pair Zach Galifianakis with.
She's just like, let's stop talking about pornography.
How about you could put him with Linda Hunt and
what, he is a tag team with fat Marlon Brando and little Linda Hunt?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could be him and the his wife in the campaign. No, I know who I wouldn't want to see him. Definitely wouldn't want to see him. Whoever the British blonde crazy looking girl who's really heavy, and she was in Bridesmaids, and she was in What to Expect When You're Expecting.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
She was her roommate in Bridesmaids who kicked her out.
Yeah. That...
In fact, I don't want to see her and the guy who played her, the like guy who has no hair on his body whatsoever, who was also in Bridesmaids. I don't want to see him have sex with anybody. I don't want to see him have sex with Zach Galifianakis because you'd have like, and it has nothing, again, nothing to do with homophobia, has the fact that he's completely clean of any sort of body hair whatsoever.
Oh, Matt Lucas.
And then Zach Galifianakis is not. He has enough hair for everybody.
He does. I'm sure he does.
Well, I think with that, we should probably go to the next segment.
Okay.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We are in the final segment, and we have, if you missed us on the radio, you can go back. We actually had some good discussion about, you know, box office. We talked a lot about The Bourne Legacy. We also talked about what we did, movies that are being pushed to 2013, and talked a little bit about Avengers 2 and whether that's going to be, you know, the pitfalls that Joss Whedon is going to potentially have of that movie.
Correct.
We also gave our Fat Guy 5, which is a great Fat Guy 5 about in honor of Hope Springs. You just have to go listen to that one to figure it out. We don't want to promote that too much on the radio. But what do we have coming up next here, Michelle?
We have the world famous DVD Roundup.
That's right. I'll let you go first since you have a couple on there that you wanted to highlight.
Yes. One of them that I was sent and was actually really excited about because I loved it when it was released in the 80s is mm-hmm. Mel Brooks' Spaceballs. It's
yes.
the 25th anniversary edition. What I really loved about it was a lot of the extras, the soundtrack. The funny soundtrack is like crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
The conversion, the 1080p conversion, it's very colorful. The bonus features though has like the original trailers, but this one has the commentary track is done by Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm. And that's new compared to,
yeah, it is. It's new from the last time that it was released on Blu.
Which was the 20th anniversary. I've done movie reviews and DVD reviews now that I'm getting we had the 20-year anniversary, and then I got the 25th, then I got the 30th. I'm like getting those 5-year marks because I've been doing reviews for 10 years. So I've got Spaceballs. I actually have two copies of Spaceballs because I have the original Spaceball Blu-ray release and the Mel Brooks collection on Blu-ray, which is a fantastic set.
And I have it on Laserdisc, so.
Whoa, old school. You got like 6 different discs you have to switch during the movie.
Exactly. I know, every right?
15 minutes.
Yeah.
You also have another one on there real quick.
I also liked the Blu-ray release of High Fidelity. With John Cusack, Jack Black, Catherine
Zeta-Jones. I haven't seen that. I've never seen that because I know everyone says it's the greatest John Cusack movie ever. I'm just not a big music fan, so.
Right, right. I was glad it was released on Blu-ray. The transfer was a little iffy on it, and it could have done with a little bit of more extras, more of the bonus features. But overall, if you like the movie, you'll be pleased that it's out on Blu.
Okay. The ones I want to highlight is The Lorax, even though it's not the best Dr. Seuss adaptation, and it does take like a 10-page children's book and explode it into a lot larger thing. It's still cute. I mean, my kids liked it. It's very colorful.
Yeah.
Looks great on Blu-ray too, so it's definitely worth checking out. Plus, they have those little mini movies. I still think Horton Hears a Who's the best one out there, but at least it's not like this live action atrocity like The Grinch or The Cat in the Hat.
No love for The Grinch.
Anyways, the next one is Grimm season 1, which is the NBC show about the guy, which is an okay show. It's the side characters are kind of dumb because nobody knows what's going on. The Blu-ray looks really cool, and it's worth checking out. Sometimes it gets overly grainy because they shoot so much at darkness or in high contrast with like light in the background that they gotta pump up the contrast a bit. So you do get a lot of weird grain moments in there. But it's still, if you're going to watch it on Blu over DVD. There's also Marley, which is the Bob Marley documentary by Kevin MacDonald. Mm-hmm. Not Kevin MacDonald from Kids in the Hall, but the other guy, the director. There's Let It Shine, which is a Disney Channel movie, basically Cyrano de Bergerac with a young rapper instead of it. So it's sort of this family-friendly urban thing. Or Cyrano de Bergerac Black, maybe, is what you could call it. I don't know. Was that politically incorrect? Am I going to get letters for that? Probably not.
Keep moving.
There's also Blue Like Jazz, which I did not like. I did not like this movie, but I know there's a lot of fans of the book. So if you want to see this movie that's an adaptation of this book about this kid who sort of has this political and religious awakening when he goes to this extremely liberal college. Mm-hmm. It's worth it to see for the fans, even though I didn't like it. It's notable because it was one of the first really big Kickstarter films that got funded through Kickstarter. So that's a little tip of the hat to that. And then the stinker of the week is Blues Brothers 2000 on Blu-ray. Why did we make this movie? There's a scene in there where is it Elwood?
Yeah.
Elwood comes out of the prison. He's waiting for his brother to show up and he's dead. That's the entire movie right there. It's like, why are we here? I don't know. And then they make the rest of the movie. So
yeah,
terrible movie. It's everything a sequel of a classic should not be.
No.
So first thing being made. It's the first thing it shouldn't have been. So review wrap up, Bourne Legacy. We both said it totally rocks. The campaign, I said totally rocks. You said kind of rocks. And then Hope Springs we didn't see, but we can't actually render a preemptive suck because next week is The Expendables 2, The Odd Life of Timothy Green, Paranorman,
Yay.
Sparkle. So we got those to look forward to. Actually, I kind of like the lineup for August, but right now, we got about 25 seconds left. Michelle, remind everybody where they can find you and get in touch with you.
You can find me at wearemoviegeeks.com and on Twitter at oman4.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Yes.
So, well, thank you so much for being on the show. It was good to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I loved it.
It's a lot of fun. We'll have you on again sometime in the future.
Oh, please do.
Between now and then, we will see you at the movies.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The Idiot Boxers with Kevin and Merrill. Celluloid Spotlight with Merrill and Hash. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.